Let's go ahead and pick up our story in Numbers chapter 16 at verse 41. We're talking about Korah's rebellion, where Korah and others had asserted that they had just as much right to function as priests as Aaron's family. And there was this showdown with censors, and the glory of God appears, the rebels end up dead, both in the encampment down at the border area between Reuben's tribe and the Kohathite area south of the tabernacle. The ground just opens up and swallows the tents and people associated with this rebellion, and then closes back up again. While in the tabernacle area, apparently the 250 guys that were trying to offer unauthorized incense, they are struck down by the fire of God. And the last thing that we were talking about is how God instructs Moses to get one of Aaron's sons to take the censers and pound them down into flat plates and hang them on the altar of sacrifice is an ongoing reminder that only those that God has authorized should be offering sacrifices and incense in the tabernacle. And this was a horrible situation, probably happened not too long after God tacked on another 38 and a half years in the wilderness because of the sin of Israel when they had the rebellion against going into the promised land thanks to the bad spies report. So now that should have solved things with this rebellion, but it didn't, because we read that on the next day, all the congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and against Aaron, saying, "You have killed the people of He Who Is." So even though it is God Himself that struck down these false priests and caused the ground to open up and swallow up the rebels, the people are blaming Moses and Aaron for it. And they're doing it in the name of God. And so they are actually taking physical action toward them in verse 42. When the congregation had assembled against Moses and against Aaron, they turned toward the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of He Who Is appeared. And we've had this event described several times now, where even though the glory of God is constantly over the tabernacle, from time to time it must flare up or get brighter or something, or move slightly in order to have these special presentations of the glory of God, which gain the attention of the people. And verse 43 says that Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting, and He Who Is spoke to Moses, saying, "Get away from the midst of this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment." Now that's similar to what he said the day before, when he was getting ready to swallow up with the earth the tents, the resident tents, of those that were part of this rebellion. Just everybody needs to back away unless they want to be caught up in the judgment. So God tells Moses and Aaron, "You need to just back away and let me mete out judgment to all of these guys." And Moses and Aaron continue to act as intercessors on behalf of these people, even the people that are griping and complaining against them. And as a principle, I think this is noteworthy for preachers, that it doesn't matter how much people talk you down, it doesn't matter how much they hassle you, you're still responsible to try to do what is best for them in spiritual matters, in the matters of God. And it is a tough part of leadership to have that mindset, because leaders are people, and people have a tendency to want to sometimes get even, but often withdraw and leave to their own justice those that cause trouble. But here is an example of Moses and Aaron knowing what the best thing to do in this situation is. So Moses said to Aaron, verse 46, take your censer, put fire on it from off the altar, lay incense on it, and carry it quickly to the congregation and make atonement for them, for wrath has gone out from he who is, the plague has begun. So Moses realizes people are going to die because of their attitudes. And we need to get in the middle of this to try to change their attitudes and also to get the proper sacrifices, the proper worshipful incense offerings that would lead to their sin being forgiven and judgment coming to an end. So verse 47, Aaron took it as Moses said and ran into the midst of the assembly. Behold, the plague had already begun among the people, and he put on the incense and made atonement for the people, and he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague stopped. Now those who died in the plague were 14,700, besides those who died in the affair of Korah. So the rebels were a much larger group than the one that we saw executed by God yesterday. They were in the tens of thousands, 14,700 to be precise. And so these guys end up executed as well. And verse 50 reports that Aaron returned to Moses at the entrance of the tent of meeting when the plague was stopped. So these guys were taken out, ended up losing the chance to be in the assembly of Israel for the next 38 and a half years as they were doing their time out. They end up losing the chance to live a life that would have been fairly decent. Because one of the things we know about the wandering experience of the Israelis is that their feet never swelled up, their clothes didn't wear out, they were getting fed miraculously 6 days a week, a double portion on the sixth day so that they could relax and recuperate on the seventh day. They were getting miraculous water. God was protecting them from the wild animals. God was doing all sorts of things for this Israeli assembly, even during its time out. And yet, here we have an example of some of them that griped and complained so much of it, so much about not being able to go into the promised land because of their own sin, that they didn't even get to enjoy the last years of their natural life. Chapter number 17 of Numbers is still part of the story of this rebellion. Because the rebellion was all about, we think, and this is from the mindset of Korah and others around him, we think Moses and Aaron are trying to be bosses when they shouldn't be. They're trying to say they're the only ones that can represent Israel to God. So after the executions, after the penalties, there is one more illustration that God decides to give to show that it is the Aaronic family that is going to function as the priests of the nation of Israel. And it's a very interesting illustration, and it produces something that ends up being put in the Ark of the Covenant. Chapter 17, verse 1. Then he who is spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel, and get from them staffs, one for each father's house, from all the chiefs according to their father's houses, 12 staffs, write each man's name on his staff. So we've got the 12 tribes of Israel, and there's a leader, an ultimate leader, probably the oldest, most respected man within that tribe. And we've seen their names elsewhere. This man is going to have a personal staff that he walks around with. And so each of these tribes, each of these tribal leaders, is to take their personal staff and make sure their name is written on that staff. Verse 3, and then write Aaron's name on the staff of Levi. So this is the 13th staff, because there's 12 tribes, because the two Benjamin tribes are full tribes themselves. So there's 12 full tribes, plus the tribe of Levi, which is the spiritual tribe, the representative tribe in the tabernacle. For there shall be one staff for the head of each father's house. Then you shall deposit them in the tent of meeting before the testimony where I meet with you. So the Ark of the Covenant is in the tabernacle, in the Holy of Holies. And in front of it somewhere, perhaps in close proximity to the altar of incense, has been placed the tablets of the Ten Commandments. They're not inside the ark just yet. They're in front of the testimony somewhere. So somewhere in close proximity to the ark, in close proximity to the Ten Commandments, they're supposed to lay down all of these leaders' staffs, including the staff of Aaron. And then God gives this as the standard. Verse 5, the staff of the man whom I choose shall sprout, and thus I will make to cease from me the grumbling of the people of Israel, which they grumble against you. So God is going to make a dead stick come to life. He's going to resurrect it as a sign of who the high priest is. And I find that very enlightening, because God brings Jesus back to life as an indicator that he, Jesus, is the only true mediator. He is the only ever-living high priest that we have. All right, back to the story. Verse 6. Moses spoke to the people of Israel. All their chiefs gave him staffs, one for each chief according to their father's house, 12 staffs. And then the staff of Aaron was among their staffs. And Moses deposited the staffs before he who is in the tent of the testimony. On the next day, Moses went into the tent of the testimony, and behold, the staff of Aaron from the house of Levi had sprouted and put forth buds and produced blossoms, and it bore ripe almonds. Now, this is very miraculous. It's one thing to have a stick freshly taken from a tree give a little sprout overnight. Maybe if there was a little bit of live core yet inside of it, it might be able to do that on its own. But for it to sprout and put on buds and blossoms and fully ripe fruit overnight, not going to happen, especially from a stick that has been dead for a pretty long time, because this staff of Aaron is the same staff that he and Moses have been passing back and forth between them since the time of the Ten Commandments. And Moses had it even before that, back when he was a shepherd driving around his father-in-law's sheep on Mount Sinai slopes. Because remember, he threw that staff at God's command on the ground and it turned into a serpent. So this staff is more than 2 years dead. And it has come to life and produced all the different stages of that sort of life, the buds, the blossoms, and the ripe almonds. And by the way, this is the reason why we know for a fact that the Staff of Power was an almond branch. And we also know, just as a matter of trivia, that the menorah, the seven-branched lampstand in the tabernacle, was supposed to be a stylized almond tree with seven branches, and at the end of these branches were blossoms into which the seven golden lamps were placed for light in the most holy place. All right, so verse number 9. Moses brought out all the staffs from before He Who Is to all the people of Israel. They looked, and each man took his staff. So there's zero doubt. Everyone knows that the staffs that went in were clearly marked, and as they come out, the 12 tribal leaders have dead staffs still. But the tribe of Levi has a living and producing staff. So this is God's indication to them, the tribe of Levi, and specifically the family of Aaron, will be the priestly tribe and family. Verse 10, He Who Is said to Moses, put back the staff of Aaron before the testimony to be kept as a sign for the rebels, that you may make an end of their grumblings against me, lest they die. And notice God says the grumblings weren't against Moses and Aaron, they were actually against him, because he was the one that was speaking through Moses and Aaron. So this is how the staff that budded, and the Ten Commandments, and the pot of manna all become the things that were eventually put into the Ark of the Covenant as objects of God's glory and demonstrations of his miraculous leadership to the Israeli people. Verse number 11. Thus did Moses, as He Who Is commanded him, so he did. The people of Israel said to Moses, behold, we perish. We're undone. We're all undone. Everyone who comes near to the tabernacle of He Who Is shall die. Are we all to perish? So now they're all thinking, we're all going to die. Everybody that comes near the tabernacle is dying. And that's not the case, but you know how people are. They immediately blow up everything that is of concern to them, bigger than it really is. But their concern is so many people have died near the tabernacle in the last few days. Chapter number 18 is a reminder that the Levites and the priests are responsible to help the people come safely into the tabernacle to the worship of the one who is, was, and will always be. So it's still part of this overarching topic of proper leadership in the tabernacle of the Israeli people. Chapter 18, verse 1. So He Who Is said to Aaron, you and your sons and your father's house with you shall bear iniquity connected with the sanctuary, and you and your sons with you shall bear iniquity connected with your priesthood, meaning you're going to be the representative family to take care of sin things. With you, bring your brothers also, the tribe of Levi, the tribe of your father, that they may join you and minister to you while you and your sons with you are before the tent of meeting. So we've got the double-sided sort of spiritual leadership and maintenance. The priestly family is going to be the one that offers the sacrifice and goes through the ceremonies according to God's directives, while the Levitical tribe is going to provide support to them to make sure they can do that. We see something similar in the New Testament, where the shepherds and the teachers, the elders, the spiritual leaders within the church are backed up by a group that we refer to as the deacons or the servants. They are leaders in their own right, but they are providing the logistical support to make it possible for the spiritual leaders to focus, as they said, upon the ministry of the Word of God and prayer. And I think that that is a good way for the modern day church to organize itself so that those of us who are doing the preaching and the teaching and the shepherding, the working with people's spiritual lives, we don't have to worry that other things are being ignored. Things like making sure the sick among us are being physically taken care of, or the hungry among us are being taken care of to be fed, and that the widows are not being thrown out in the street because nobody's taking care of their needs. So the evangelists, the shepherd teachers, they focus on the spiritual health of the church, while the deacons, and yes, the deaconesses, because you have in the New Testament both genders take leadership roles depending on what needs to be done. They take care of the physical, logistical aspects of the family of Jesus Christ. And so whatever it is that you need to do in the church, make sure that you do your part for the work of the whole. All right, so back to the text where God is still talking to Aaron, particularly. They shall keep guard over you and over the whole tent, but shall not come near to the vessels of the sanctuary or to the altar, lest they and you die. So only the priests are supposed to be doing the sacrificial things and doing the worship aspect within the tabernacle building, that is, offering the incense and putting the bread on the table and the cups and the drink offerings and things of that nature. They shall join you and keep guard over the tent of meeting for all the service of the tent. No outsider shall come near you, and you shall keep guard over the sanctuary and over the altar, that there may never again be wrath on the people of Israel. So there is a security aspect that the Levites are involved in as well. And we see this in the building of the temple. There's a fairly large security force. Same is true in the New Testament. There's a security force. Even though in the New Testament, in the gospel stories, that security force is being used for illegitimate things like arresting Jesus or arresting the apostles. And all they were doing was preaching and teaching the truth. And yet the security force of the temple was utilized against them. Verse 6, behold, I've given your brothers, the Levites, from among the people of Israel. They are a gift to you, given to he who is, to the service of the tent of meeting. You and your sons with you shall guard your priesthood for all that concerns the altar, and that is within the veil, and you shall serve. I give your priesthood as a gift, and any outsider who comes near shall be put to death. And then he who is spoke to Aaron, behold, I've given you charge of the contributions made to me, all the consecrated things of the people of Israel. I have given them to you as a portion and to your sons as a perpetual due. These shall be yours of the most holy things reserved from the fire. And so now God reminds him, there are certain sacrifices that only a part of it is used in the worship. The rest of it is yours to eat and to store away for future eating if it's appropriate, and to give to your family, because the priests are paid out of the offerings. This shall be yours of the most holy things reserved from the fire. Every offering of theirs, every grain offering of theirs, every sin offering of theirs, every guilt offering of theirs, which they render to me, shall be most holy to you and to your sons. In a most holy place you shall eat it. Every male may eat it. It is holy to you. This also is yours, the contribution of their gift, all the wave offerings of the people of Israel. I have given them to you and to your sons and daughters with you as a perpetual due. Everyone who is clean in your house may eat it. So there's a distinction even within the offerings, some of them can only be eaten by on-duty priests and priests in training, while others can be eaten by the entire priestly family group. We've seen this exemplified before. Verse 12, all the best of the oil, all the best of the wine and of the grain, the first fruits of what they give to he who is, I give to you. The first ripe fruits of all that is in the land, which they bring to he who is, shall be yours. Everyone who is clean in your house may eat it. Every devoted thing in Israel shall be yours. So the tithe that comes in, that's what we mean here by the first fruits and the first of everything. The first tenth that is given into the service of the Lord goes into the hands of the Levitical tribe and then also into the hands of the priest. And from that, they eat. And that's something of interest in the offerings that we still give to this day. The church is supported out of the tithes and offerings that go into the church treasury. And the preacher and all the associate ministers and any paid staff, paid deacons, we would refer to them from a biblical sense, they are paid out of those offerings so that they can pay their own bills and buy their own groceries and do all of that sort of stuff. That is appropriate. And in the New Testament, we have a couple of different places that point back to passages like this to remind the New Testament church that they ought to support out of church funds the paid staff. And I thank you very much that you are participating in that, because that's the only reason I can devote so much of my life and my time to do things like I'm doing right now. Well, we're out of time for the day, so let's mark our place right there in Numbers 18. And tomorrow, Lord willing, we'll be back here into the Word.